Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Insight into Healing. My name is Alexa Servididio, and I am your host. I would like to start off tonight by thanking everyone so much for all their support through the shows and all the wonderful feedback that I've been getting. And please keep sending your questions in to insightintohealing@gmail.com. And please check out our Facebook page on Insight into Healing, where you can either send me a private message or post your question. Again, all names will remain anonymous unless further instructed, and all questions are from you, the listeners, and also from different case studies that I've put together through the years through my private practice. For those who are new to the show, I am a licensed clinical social worker. I'm a psychotherapist. I work at a large mental health clinic, but I also have my own private practice. I work with children, adults, families, couples, and individuals working everything from anxiety, depression, hoarding, sexual abuse, trauma, communication difficulties, ADHD, to communication problems. So my practice really covers a wide range of different areas. So let's get started with our first question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am going through a divorce, and I have not been single in 15 years. How do I start my life over? I get this question a lot in my private practice and also at the clinic, because I find that when you're going through a divorce, and a lot of people don't realize this, and I've had a lot of listeners tell me after a couple of shows I've done before on grieving and bereavement and death and dying, that divorce is a death. It is a death of a dream. It is a death of an ideal. It is a death of what someone thought what would be. And I know sometimes, even if it was you want the divorce, and it's in some terms good that the divorce is happening, it's still a loss. It's still a sadness. And I think when you say, how do I start my life over, it's really making sure that you grieve this death of the marriage, death of your significant other in terms of the relationship. So before you start, before you start dating, before you start putting yourself really fully back there into the dating pool, which I know can be controversial because some people say, you know, get back on the horse, jump right in, I find that you really need to take time to heal, really take time to kind of see what was going on, to become stronger and really start grounding yourself. So that when you start your new relationship, if that's what you're looking for, you don't bring a lot of the past with you. And I find, too, you always have to close one door before you open another. And I think it's just healthy moving forward that you do this. And by starting your life over, it's really, I guess, defining you as a person. And I think, I'm not sure how this marriage was. Yes, it was for 15 years. I'm not sure if you worked, if you had children, or what was else part of the marriage. But I find with a lot of couples, sometimes the female has really, the marriage defines her. The marriage defines who she is, what her life is, moving forward. So once the divorce happens and the marriage is over, a lot of times people are stuck saying, who am I? What am I? You know, they always define themselves as a mother, as a wife, as a companion, or even as a man, as a husband, as the provider, as the father. So when you go back into life without your significant other, it can become very frightening. It can be very challenging. But I think it's something that needs to be addressed, and it needs also to explore. I know sometimes, you know, people want to start dating right away and get back into a relationship, but I find if you give yourself at least 6 months to kind of heal, to kind of sort through what happened, kind of mourn the loss, you will feel stronger and you also feel a lot healthier for the next phase of your life. And you said you haven't been single for 15 years. I think this also has come up a lot, too, if you, some of my listeners have heard my past shows on online dating, internet, and all the new technology, you know, with texting and Facebooking and all the social media. It's changed. I mean, if you got married when you were younger, say, many, many years ago, the way of courting, the way of meeting people, I think is a lot different. And also it can be a little challenging. And I think the rules, there are kind of these unspoken rules that everybody sort of knows, or you learn the hard way and you learn as you go, which can be kind of disturbing sometimes, I think also discouraging. So I said, number one, really figure out where do you want to start your life over? What do you want to focus on? Other than healing and mourning the loss, where do you want to go? Do you, if you're not working, do you want to go back to work? What are your goals? And I think by really starting your life over is really defining what your day will look like, you know, what will your month look like, what type of activities will you be interested in? I think really, you know, it's hard, I guess, if you're used to having your significant other with you all the time to be doing these activities alone. Or if, you know, sometimes when you're in a marriage for a long time, your friends are other couples. So I find a lot of times with my clients, when there is a divorce, the friends kind of split up. So that, you know, the couple will stay with one person and you kind of, it's hard to be friends, everybody be friends again, because it becomes a little uncomfortable, you know, the couple and the ex-wife and the ex-husband and the friends all go out, it's a little difficult, or if maybe someone else starts dating again, it's really hard. So I think it's also figuring out, you know, who your friends are, what type of friends you're looking for, and what type of activities do you want to do. And I think also it's a chance of, I know it's a tough time, it's a really transitional part in your life, but it's saying really which direction do you want to go? What type of people do you want to allow in your life? What type of activities do you want to do? And I think also knowing the difference between what is your passion, what is your goals, what makes you happy. And I don't think, as I tell people, you're not going to find this overnight. You're not going to all of a sudden say, wow, I love to go ice skating, this is what I'm going to do. It might not happen like that. It might actually take a while. And you might do a couple of things that you really don't find that exciting, or that exciting doing them by yourself. So I think, one, preparing yourself, it's gonna be a bit of a bumpy ride, and that's okay. You know, good change and moving forward does not happen overnight. This is really building your foundation from the beginning and moving, grounding yourself, knowing who you are, knowing what you bring to the table, and being able to build on top of that. So I guess also putting your, I would say, emotional armor on, because it's going to be a bumpy ride. As it is with death and dying and loss, there's different stages. There's anger, there's depression, there's bargaining, there's denial. So I think you kind of have to prepare yourself that these things might happen, and not to be too hard on yourself and judge yourself and say, what is going on? Why am I feeling this? It's been a couple of months. I should be over this. I think changing that negative monologue at one point will be good, but in the beginning you might just be kind of turning it off. And ways of turning it off has been some of the other exercises that I've done throughout my shows. You know, the grounding, physical grounding, mental grounding, using different types of breathing techniques, counting backwards from 1,000, doing different things like that, so you can kind of distract yourself from going back to those negative thoughts. Because I find with a lot of my clients what happens, and I think it happens with anybody, you just kind of start doing that, you know, as they say, backseat driver, or, you know, Monday morning quarterback. You go back and analyze and go over every single situation, every single conflict, every single good time, every single bad time, saying, what could I have done different? Or what can I do different next time? And I think, yes, it's good to kind of analyze what's been going on and sit with it and have awareness. But I think if you're really there to judge, you're really there to place blame, it kind of takes away from the process. And you're just kind of stuck in that negativity and that cycle. So I really want to make sure, as you're starting your life over, it's one, being really honest with yourself and being really able to say, okay, it's going to be a bumpy ride. There's no Band-Aid that I can put on this. And I think that's why I say don't jump right into another relationship. Because, yes, the wound is still cut and you can have a big slash. You put a Band-Aid over, it'll protect it somewhat. But guess what? Things will seep in. The Band-Aid will fall off. It won't be strong enough. So you don't want to be all of a sudden have this little Band-Aid, and then all of a sudden the Band-Aid gets ripped off, and you're raw. And it's just sitting out there. So I want to make sure that as you go through, yes, as you always say, as a metaphor, you have to heal your wounds. You have to change your wounds. You have to put medication on it. You have to put cream on it. You really have to nurture it. And I feel that's what you need to do with your mind, with your heart, with your soul, with your thoughts, and with your awareness, is really learn to take care of yourself. Because I find a lot, too, in the male perspective and in the female perspective, they spent a lot of times, as you do in a marriage, taking care of the other person, being, you know, very aware of the other person's needs, being very, you know, very accommodating, and it kind of becomes your job. It becomes your how you define yourself. So how, you know, you spend most of your day, I guess, planning what you're going to do for dinner, when you're going to meet, how you're going to do this, and around the kids and around getting together, that all of a sudden you find, wow, there's, you know, some open space, there's a void. And we want to make sure we don't just stick anything in there to fill the void. You know, something was taken out. So slowly we have to build the void and start filling the void. But we can't just all of a sudden stick another person. Because I find it almost comes to, you know, same person, different face. We don't want to have kind of the same thing happening that happened in the marriage, in the divorce, for the same reason, you know, why the marriage ended. And I think that's what sometimes happens. People, couples, reenact things that have happened in their childhood that they couldn't fix or that they couldn't work on or heal, that they pick a significant other. And they do this dance. They either have the pursuer or the distancer, and you go back and forth and you play this game. So I think being really maybe aware of that, and maybe when you're ready going to see a therapist to find out what was your role in the marriage, in the divorce, not putting blame. It's not a negativity. It's not blaming. It's not judging. It's saying, okay, it's a marriage. There's two people in it. What was my role? Because we have to take responsibility. We all bring something to the table, and that effect too. What was my responsibility? Could I listen better? Could I do this? But I think it's not judging, saying, oh, I remember I did this, and I'm such a bad person. It's not about blaming and judging. It's about being awareness and saying, where can we go from here? The past is the past. We can't go back and fix it. And we also want to make sure we're not picking a significant other that kind of mirrors the person that we were just with, so we can act it out and do it differently this time. And I know that can be a little bit confusing, what I just said. We don't want to pick the same person, maybe someone in the same circumstances, but sometimes unconsciously we do this. We find someone that it triggers, you know, things in us. But yes, we don't want to keep repeating negative behaviors that we have in past relationships, but we just don't want to pick someone that we know we can work those negative behaviors with. So we don't want to keep our negative behaviors, but we want to be able to be aware on our own as our single person saying, okay, these are, as I call, isms. These are our things. These are our quirks. These are things we do. And I'm not, you know, this is things that have any concern of safety or addiction or abuse. So those are something very serious. That's something you really have to get professional help when there's safety and things like that involved. But I'm saying, you know, different things. If we know we get upset over certain things, or we have a hard time communicating when we're angry, or we raise our voice sometimes, I think it's saying, okay, which ways can I work on that? And being able to really be honest and be in an open place. And this is a lot easier said than done. It's hard. I think it's hard for anyone. And I tell a lot of people when they come into therapy, as an individual or as a couple, the first couple of sessions is going to be tough most of the time. And, you know, it's almost like, why did I come in here? This is worse than anything I could think of. But you know what it is? It's not about rehashing and blaming and judging. It's about putting it on the table. Because I want to make sure there's no secrets, there's no things that haven't kind of been explored. And then we go from there, pulling back the layers. So yes, at times it's difficult to really say what's going on and how you feel. And also it's being vulnerable. And I think that's an important thing in order to, if you say, how do I start my life over? If you're meaning to go into another relationship, it's how to be vulnerable. And I think there's a difference. A lot of people think vulnerability is weakness. It's not. Vulnerability is awareness. Vulnerability is knowing your truth. knowing who you are and being grounded in who you are. And, you know, unfortunately, no relationship is a guarantee. We can't guarantee. We can go in with the best intentions, and this is the person I'm going to be with, and I'm not going to hurt the person. But sometimes, you know, we're human. We don't mean to sometimes hurt the other people. Things happen. Not that that's a reason or an excuse, but things happen. So I think it's being able to say, okay, how can I sit with this and try, yes, you can. It's personal, so you take it personal, but to be able to take a step outside of it and say, okay, this was my role, this was my significant other's role, what can I learn from this, and how can I move forward? And again, with this listener who says, I haven't been single in 15 years, that's also a huge change. And I think, you know, as I said before, what is your social life like? What is your friends like? What is your family? Do you still have family around? Because sometimes, you know, when you get married and you're in a marriage, you seem to go to maybe one person's family more than the other, or were both families involved. So then it's almost mourning a loss of the significant other, and then if you were close to that family, then it's almost mourning the loss of that. So by starting your life over, number one, I would say start with the journaling, because I know, as if you listened to my show before, I say a lot about journaling and really working on your inner awareness, you know, writing a letter to yourself as a child, writing a letter to yourself now, writing a letter to yourself in 10 years. And that's actually going to be our, I'll repeat that again in more depth at the end of the show, that's going to be our journaling exercise today. And also, if you've heard my show before that I did on couples therapy, when there's communication problems, when there's infidelity, it's almost finding the communication or the issues that came up when you were in your marriage, in your relationship, have they come up in other relationships in your life? Have they, if you work, do they come up in work? Do they come up when you go, when you're with friends? Do they come up with your children? And really being able to take a kind of a personal inventory, an overhaul of your life, and saying, okay, and look at it more, yes, it's a challenge, and yes, it's a tough place to be, but saying, okay, this is going to be, I can turn this negative into a positive, and I'm going to use this to move forward and start building my foundation. Because I find when you have a strong, strong foundation, and you're built in on it, and you can be saying, okay, this is where I plan on going, and you have goals, and you outline goals, doesn't mean you have to have a deadline. I think don't make sure you don't put like a definite deadline. Say maybe in 3 years I would like to be working this full-time job. I would like to be maybe president of my company. I would like to have my own company. I would have liked to go on vacation. I would have liked to have my mortgage paid off. I think setting realistic goals and setting things that you can start feeling good about yourself. And also, there's a lot of different groups out there for people who are divorced, for both men and women, for support groups. If you feel like you need to go to a support group, you can go to one. They usually have many of them in your own town or state. You can do support groups, or they even have meetups for different things for single people in your age group. I know you said you haven't been single in 15 years, so I'm really not sure how old you are, but it's also maybe finding a meetup where you can find people, and they'll give you an age group that you can go and maybe do, you know, you can learn how to cook a dish, or you can go horseback riding or boating. And I think then it's a different way of maybe, especially if you haven't been interacting with the opposite sex in such a long time, that's a new thing to kind of learn. How do you talk to them? Because you get so used to the person you're married to. It's almost this whole new language that, you know, this unspoken language that you need to kind of start learning. And, you know, people can tell you about it, but I don't think you really learn it until you experience. So please let me know if this helped, and make sure, you know, get out there, maybe get a good therapist, get a good support group, and a good set of friends, and please follow up with me and let me know if there's anything else that I could definitely help you with. So let's go. Our next question is, Dear Insight into Healing. Our next question is, Dear Insight into Healing. I recently gave birth to my daughter, and I'm having difficulties with the recovery. I feel very sad and distant from my new baby. Is this postpartum depression? Now, this is a very interesting question. I looked up a few articles online, and one was called Depression, Managing Postpartum Depression. And as it says, if you have the baby blues after childhood, you're not alone. About half of the women have a few days of mild depression after having a baby. But I think when it starts getting into the place where, okay, this is a little bit more than just the baby blues, is if you start feeling overwhelming feelings of sadness, a lot of tears, irritability, certain amounts of insomnia, you know, very heavy mood swings. And if these don't subside within 2 weeks, I think that's when you start getting a little concerned about what's going on. I know it's been also, you can also say the hormones change a lot after giving a baby when you have that. So it kind of goes up, your hormones go up and down, and you're kind of all over the place. So it's also, they say within 2 weeks, your hormones should start to settle down. And if your body isn't recovering from childbirth as expected, then I would definitely go to your psychiatrist. First speak to your OBGYN and let him or her know that you have some concerns, but also to go maybe to a psychiatrist and get diagnosed. As they say here, postpartum depression is a serious medical condition that can be prolonged and disabling without treatment and can affect a baby's development. What they mean by that is if you know different stages of attachment or different ways when a baby is growing, is they read very well on how their mother is feeling. Yes, they're not able to you know, physically show it, or they're not able to really, you know, say it. When I say physically show it, they're not able to speak it. But their body can feel you pulling back. The body can feel that there's some distancing going on. So that's what I think when they say with the development, if they're not encouraged, or, you know, mom isn't happy when she sees them, or mom isn't, you know, giving them the affection that they need, that can also happen with, you know, affect the baby's development. And it's best treated with counseling, and this article says antidepressant medicine. With this, definitely, I would definitely go to your psychiatrist, go to your OBGYN, your regular doctor, and say, you know, this is what's been going on. And I know you said you recently gave birth and that you're having difficulties recovering. Really saying, what are those difficulties? And putting them down and really looking at them. And I think also, number one, looking at the safety of your child. Do you feel like you're putting your daughter in jeopardy? Is there, you know, when you say you're feeling distant from the baby, are you able to hold the baby? If you're nursing, are you able to nurse the baby? And I think a lot, you know, what there comes a lot of concern is that there's been a lot in the news within the last few years of different things going on with moms and you know, ending up hurting their children. So, you know, I'm not trying to cause alarm, but if you start to feel that, I think it's a difference you start feeling in your gut, that it's like, this is more than a temporary feeling of sadness or lack of energy. And usually after the first couple of months of childbirth, you'll start seeing it. And it seems, as I said, to be triggered by normal hormonal changes after pregnancy. These hormonal changes are especially likely to lead to depression if you've had depression before. That's number one. I'm not sure if you said this either. You know, it wasn't in this question. If you have a history of depression, this is something you might have spoken to with your OBGYN or your doctor, or if you're in therapy about, because that's definitely something you want to look at. Or if you're under a lot of stress or you have poor support from your partners, friends, or family, this is something, another kind of trigger that can trigger postpartum depression. And so you probably have postpartum depression if you've had 5 or more of the following symptoms, including at least one of the first 2 symptoms for most of each day over the past 2 weeks. 1, depressed mood, tearfulness, hopelessness, and feeling empty inside, possible with severe anxiety. A significant loss of pleasure in either all or almost all of your daily activities. Appetite and weight change, usually a drop in your appetite and weight, but sometimes the opposite. Sleep problems, usually insomnia, even when your baby is sleeping. Noticeable changes in how you walk and talk, usually restlessness, but sometimes sluggishness. Extreme fatigue or loss of energy, feeling worthless or having inappropriate guilt. Difficulty concentrating and making decisions, thinking a lot about death and suicide. Now that's really big. If you're finding that you're thinking a lot about death and suicide, you need to immediately take yourself to the ER. That is very, very serious. And especially if you're having ideation, if there's a plan, you really want to make sure that it's a serious thing. And I know it's, you know, sometimes it's such a big thing on the body, having a baby, but I think it's very serious. So really, please check out your doctor. And as they say, postpartum depression affects you and your baby. It interferes with your ability to function normally. As I said before, including caring and also having that attachment, that bonding. And also some babies of depressed mothers will start lagging behind developmentally and in behavior and mental ability. And why this happens, as I said before, is, you know, children need that safe environment to grow, to be kind of encouraged. And they can kind of feel it intuitively when there's somebody pulling back, when there's something going on. So the encouragement isn't there. So I think a lot of times, you know, people say, oh, the baby doesn't know, it has no idea. There is. And I think if you really read up on it, there's a lot that you can do to help prepare yourself and actually to work through this. So it says, talk to your doctor about postpartum depression and the symptoms, and also what treatment is right for you. There's a lot of different treatments. Yes, going to therapy, and they do a lot, as I do before, is a cognitive behavioral therapy. This is also recommended for women who have had postpartum depression in the past, and it can also prevent postpartum depression. It also helps you with you managing your anxiety, using the deep breathing as we do a lot in the grounding exercises. But I think it's also helping you really focus on what's going on and growing from it. Different counseling, focusing on your relationship, maybe some couples counseling to help you with your marriage. I'm not sure if your significant other is helping you, is in the picture. So that can also be a big thing, a big help to help you do this. And also being evaluated by a psychiatrist to see if there might need antidepressant medication. But I think really postpartum is a very serious thing. So I really would not take it too lightly. And I know sometimes people say, oh, it's depression, you'll get over it, just go out there and do something. I think it's really necessary for you to be able to go see a professional and really, really be able to get evaluated for your sake and for your baby's sake. Now this will actually lead us into our first song that I want to play this evening. It's called Need You Now, How Many Times by Plum.
I wanna believe there's
Welcome back. That was Need You Now, How Many Times by Plum. I hope you enjoyed that song. I know it was a little bit of an intense song, but I felt it really fit the last question that we were talking about and discussing the last two questions. I think there's also comes a time in people's lives in different situations might not have to deal with postpartum or with a divorce, but sometimes life can become so overwhelming. So I find, you know, sometimes using these songs and using different encouraging words or positive affirmations can really help us ground ourselves and really get the motivation and get the strength to move forward. Let's go on to our third question. Dear Insight into Healing, I am an 84-year-old woman and my husband will be 90 in May. My husband was recently just discharged from a nursing home where he suffered physical abuse. My husband has extreme anxiety now and is fearful to leave the apartment. We live in a 4-story walk-up and it has been almost impossible to leave our apartment when needed. What services are out there for us? Wow, this has so many different layers and so many different avenues that we can go in. So I just wanted to kind of start in the beginning. You said you're an 84-year-old woman and your husband will be 90 in May. There's actually two places that you can look into. You can also call Adult Protective Services, APS. They have usually in every state, every country. So I'm not sure where you are. So if you can put in Adult Protective Services, you can find them and get it. They usually have a 1-800 number. You can give them a call and give them an idea of what's going on and what happened. And then what they will do is do an intake. And they'll ask you a number of different questions. And usually they're very nice, they're well trained. So please feel free to tell them what's been going on. And they'll just find out, you know, maybe send someone to you, because it sounds like it's hard for you to leave the apartment. They can send a worker to your house to better evaluate and assess the situation. I'm not sure if this is a crisis situation or what is going on. So I think definitely call Adult Protective Services. And there's also another place, Service Program for Older People Incorporated. It's SPOP, S-P-O-P. There's one right now in New York City, so I can definitely, we'll put those different numbers and websites on my page at Insight into Healing on Facebook. And what they do, SPOP, S-P-O-P, provides bereavement support at no cost to their participants. This can be individual therapy, or this can be different voluntary-led groups, which I find is really important because I know you said there's some anxiety, which being around other people in your generation going through what you're going through, I think can be really important for you. And I guess also finding, you said there's anxiety, they also will find out, you know, is there any psychiatric disabilities? Is there any type of depression, too, other than the anxiety? And as many adults find that the sharing their experience with other people that are going through the same things is also very supportive. And I know I speak a lot sometimes of support groups. And I know people don't want to get other people around, you know what's going on, and there's that shame of not letting others know what's going on in the home. But it's very empowering, very powerful to be able to sit with a group of people and be able to say what's going on and also have other people have an idea of what's going on who support you, who have some similar experiences. And I find that, I mean, if you've never been in a group, yes, at first it could be a little frightening to go into a group of people you don't know, but usually groups are very well run, and then the person who runs it really sets up guidelines. They set up boundaries. And I think it becomes very powerful. Actually, the group really becomes the leader. Because the group gets to, you know, it kind of tells you the different ways, which you know, way the group wants to go, what topics you want to go over. So I'm pretty sure a lot of these things, you know, saying with anxiety and then fear of what, especially now you're saying that there was recently discharged from a nursing home where he suffered physical abuse. Again, I would definitely call, as I said before, Adult Protective Services. I know sometimes people get frightened of retaliation, or you're nervous about certain things. So I actually spoke to this woman on the phone, and she was very concerned about, you know, about retaliation, about if people would believe her. And I can understand when especially you're in your older years, it can be a little frightening. But I think it's also being able to reach out. There's a lot of different services out there that can really help you. And I want to also know that you're not alone. And if this, especially if you're talking about special service program for older people, they do exclusively to mental health care for older adults. So they're really, this is their specialty, to work with older adults. And I think that's where it becomes really an asset to you. And I think it also becomes, it becomes this part where people can really, they have a kind of a window into what your world is and what the different stage of life you are right now. And when you say you were discharged from the nursing home, I'm not sure if that was voluntary or if something happened. I think I'm not sure if there's actually going to be any other legal issues coming out of this, that there was definitely some physical abuse. Is there a nurse coming to the home now? If there's not a nurse coming home, and I think if you need any other services for that, a lot of good places you can find on the internet, they have home health aides, they have VNS, visiting nurse services. Those are usually all over in many states. So I think finding someone like that, and it sounds that you're in a four-story walk-up, and it's been almost impossible to leave your apartment. That's really hard. I mean, to be walking up and down for anyone every day, up and down, four-story walk-up, and for your husband, too, if he suffered the physical abuse and he has a lot of anxiety, it must be really, I think, even more anxiety if you're going up and down the stairs, and also that fear. And I think, you know, when you said he's very fearful of others now and anxiety because of physical abuse, that sounds a lot, too, like post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'll actually get into that probably in the next question that I'm doing. But it's very serious, and it's rightfully so. I mean, it must have been very frightening for the both of you with having the physical abuse in a nursing home. So one, I would start with calling Adult Protective Services, APS. You can look it up on the internet. They can definitely find one close to you, or there's a 1-800 number. Then also checking out service program for older people. I've actually filled out applications for other clients, and they accept Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance. They work with adults 55 and above. And you know what? Most of their clients, they say, consider themselves young. So you don't have to feel, I'm not saying, you know, they're older. So a lot of these people are saying this is what's going on. And they have, they're culturally sensitive. They do therapy in English, Spanish, French, Mandarin, and Korean. So it's really pretty interesting. A lot of the professional staff make home visits. And I think this is something I'd really recommend, I think, for the predicament that you're in, is to start with a home visit, because it sounds like trying to get your husband out of the apartment is re-traumatizing for him and also traumatizing for you. And I always say on my show, I'm not sure if you listen to it, safety first. I think that's what I'm really concerned of you two, you know, trying to carry each other up and down the stairs and going up and down for medical concerns, for also, you know, suffering the physical abuse, for anxiety. I think it's really putting yourself in jeopardy. So I would definitely call and see if they can have someone come to your home. And what a home visit would probably look like is they would, a worker would come, interview you, ask you some questions, see what it is. And if there was a crisis, if the worker thought that there was a crisis or that you were in danger or your husband was in danger and there were safety issues, they would probably, you know, if EMS didn't come with them, they would probably have EMS. And I know that can be frightening for some people, because you would have to go to the hospital and to be evaluated and make sure, you know, I know you said your husband has physical abuse. I don't know if there's open wounds. I don't know if he had medical attention for it and how things are for you. But I think really you might have to go to the hospital and to get checked. And I know after a certain age, people don't like to leave their house. They want to stay in their home. But I feel that it's really that necessary to go with them. If you feel yourself at this moment that there is a safety issue, then I think definitely if there's an emergency, to call 911 and have them come in and do an evaluation and to see what's happening. Because it's really, you know, safety first. And having to go up and down these stairs, I'd really want a professional or someone with medical background to be up, to be around, to be able to watch this. That is on the immediate side. Moving forward, as I said, visiting nurse can come to the house to check up on his medical needs. Also, I think finding different agencies for case management. There's all many, many different. They have home health aides. They have different places now that will actually assign you a caseworker. And this caseworker will come depending on your need and your level of risk. They might come once a week, or they might come every 2 weeks, once a month. And what they'll do, they'll come to the home. They'll help you with appointments. They'll help you engage in different activities if you have to go to the doctor. I think they're also, what's really great, is they'll help advocate for you, which I find, you know, it's hard, even when you're in your best condition, to advocate to these different groups, to advocate for services. So having a caseworker is someone who can, another person there, and I think really building a team and having a team. And I know it's kind of discouraging, a little overwhelming to think of letting all these people, all these new people into your life and moving forward with it. But I think really having a team of professionals will be really what you need. And I think number one, definitely address the safety, address any medical concerns, any medical crisis, do that, I think. And then also the extreme anxiety and the post-traumatic stress disorder. I think that's definitely something that has to be addressed with a therapist, with a psychiatrist, because it's very frightening. And, you know, sometimes with post-traumatic stress, it can linger. It can stay for a while. So, and I'm thinking, you know, you said your husband will be 90 in May. It's you know, he's been through a lot. And I think he really, you know, to speak to someone about what's going on, to speak to his concerns about his safety, because I'd really, to see all of you kind of start to isolate, and that's what happens when there's been abuse, when there's anxiety or post-traumatic stress. Sometimes people will isolate themselves, and they'll kind of, you know, shelter and stay on their own, which can be very dangerous. There's tons of services out there. There's tons of people. You can have casework. You can also have a home health aide, which will help you with daily activities. I'm not sure what your husband's daily living skills are or where your daily living skills are. They can have someone could cook your meals for you. They have someone that can, you know, do chores around the house. They have someone, if you really need to bathe you, someone to, you know, prepare different things. And I think, you know, it also becomes a time saying, you know, is this what I really need? And it sounds like you've done so much for your husband. You have been such a huge support for him. You've been really there for him, that by bringing this team in, sometimes it's just so overwhelming. There's only so much one person can do. So I would really recommend that, to bring that team in. And I wanted to also go over, I had actually one of the applications from service professionals of older people, and what a basic intake would look like. It's just, you know, with your name and address and what insurance you have, who your regular doctor is, who your emergency contact would be, any type of medication you're on, any type of medical conditions you have, any type of psychiatric history. That would include any prior treatment, hospitalizations. I think also if there's any suicide, any violence, any substance abuse, that's something definitely to look into. And also with the medical problems, looking into, has there been any surgeries lately? I think also when you said he suffered physical abuse, is there any open wounds? Does he need to have any, you know, immediate attention? That is something. And also another one's very interesting, social network. Who is your social network? And I think sometimes, you know, it sounds like you've been isolating a little bit and there's really no one there. I'm not sure if there's family around that can help or anything like that, but I think it's also building your social network. And this definitely sounds like an agency, like a company that could really help you go out. They also do a lot of different things. They do different symptoms for depression. They evaluate for substance abuse. They do challenges of rehabilitation therapy, life skills training, medication management, meals, and also really just building a safe environment. So what I would actually, you know, really go first, number safety, safety concerns, medical concerns. Then I think also going for the anxiety, see if there's a diagnosis of PTSD. And I think then also maybe, I'm not sure how long you've lived in this apartment, but is there a chance you'd want to move? Because I think this, you know, it's a four-story walk-up. That is pretty high. And I think that's, you know, do you really want to do that every day? Is it, you know, I'm not saying it's hard of to kind of give up your independence, but it's not. I think it comes of saying, you know what, this is pretty serious. You know, what is going on, and do I need somebody else to help me? And is it moving? Because then that becomes a totally different other thing. There's also places that have housing companies that they can definitely help you with, housing agencies. This, you know, if you get a caseworker, they can help you fill out a housing application, which I think is really very important to do too, to really think about. I know it's a lot to think about, and it's a lot of different things on your plate, but please take a really good look at it and see, is this something that, you know, you feel is needed and necessary? Please let me know if this has helped, and I will definitely post any of this on my website for future reference. I actually wanted, before the end of the show, I wanted to go and recap a question that we had a while ago on a bullying show that I did. The writer wrote back, "I am writing to you again to give you an update on my predicament. I have been being bullied by a gang of bullies in my gated community. It has been so severe for me, I was recently hospitalized. I feel as if no one really believes me and thinks I'm exaggerating. I feel like I have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Is that possible?" Yes, that is possible. I actually have a definition right here, post-traumatic stress disorder, from the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. It is a serious, potentially debilitating condition that can occur in people who have experienced or witnessed a natural disaster, a serious accident, a terrorist incident, sudden death of a loved one, war, violent personal assault such as rape or other life-threatening events. And I think this also goes back to the question that we just had over the 84-year-old woman and her husband, and a 90-year-old who was physically abused in the nursing home. Yes, that's what I was saying. This definitely could be PTSD. 7.7 million Americans age 18 and older have PTSD. 67% of people exposed to mass violence have been shown to develop PTSD. So this is very, very serious. It can affect children. It also affects, we hear a lot, members of the military. So I think it's something with PTSD is to really get diagnosed. And I know you said you were recently hospitalized. Now, this is pretty serious. I'm not sure with the bullying, when you're saying this gang of bullies in the gated community, I know we gave some tips of how to try to you know, protect yourself, but it sounds like this has gotten very, very, very serious. So I'm hopefully, you know, while you were in the hospital, they could have maybe set you up with other agencies or different people to advocate for you. But I think definitely, I'm not sure if they diagnosed you with PTSD, but to definitely, you know, make sure that this is something that you address, because it is very, very serious. They also say that genes can also encourage PTSD. Many scientists are focusing on genes that play a role in creating fear memories. Now, fear memories are created to help refine or find new interventions for reducing symptoms of PTSD. I mean, it's very, very serious. Different things, different parts of the brain involved in dealing with fear and stress also help researchers better understand the possible causes of PTSD. And one thing about what the symptoms can be, it's re-experiencing symptoms, flashbacks, reliving the trauma over and over again, including physical symptoms like a racing heart or sweating, especially when you're saying there are these gang of bullies in your community. It almost sounds like, yes, you know, they did all these horrible things, but I think it sticks with you. So you have this, as they would say, hyperarousal symptom, being easily startled, feeling tense or on edge, having difficulty sleeping, or having angry outbursts. They're usually constant, these hyperarousal symptoms, instead of being triggered by things that remind one of the traumatic events. And what happens is you feel just very, very stressed. You feel very, very angry. There's also avoidance symptoms, staying away from places, events, or objects that are reminders of the experience, feeling emotionally numb, feeling a strong guilt of depression, or guilt or worry, losing interest in activities that were enjoyable in the past, having problems sometimes remembering the dangerous events, having bad dreams or frightening thoughts. So yes, it sounds like, you know, I just spoke to this person before about how serious this bullying was, and this physical, it was really just abuse, basically what they were really doing to you, and their scare tactics were just so frightening. So I definitely think that this could be PTSD, and I think moving forward is how do you work through this? How do you, you know, start to heal from this? I think really, you know, one, obviously you were in the hospital, I guess finding out if this is your diagnosis, also finding out if there's medication that needs to be introduced, and three, maybe setting up some safety things. I mean, I don't know how long, I know sometimes moving isn't an option, but it's really, sounds really like in a very dangerous, dangerous situation. And then if you listen to my show before, I'm really about, you know, safety first. Is there maybe a friend you can stay with? Maybe, I know people don't want to go into leave their own home and go into a shelter, but I know a lot of times they have a domestic violence shelter. You know, and this is a very serious, your safety is in danger, your mental health is in danger. So I feel really looking into something like that. Please keep in touch with me and let me know what further is going on. And I think really starting to see, you know, is there any progress? And if you need any more help moving forward with this, we also, the Anti-Bullying Association had some lawyers working with them and had other legal places that I can definitely set you up with. Now this will lead into our next song by Matthew West, Child of the One True King. Of the One True King. Great, great song. Well, before we end the show tonight, I would like to go back to our journaling exercise that I like to give every day, every show at the end of the show. And I know I mentioned it in the beginning. This journaling exercise will be write three letters. The first letter is one to your inner child. And what I mean to your inner child, write, pick an age, maybe 5 years old, 6 year old, 7 years old, and write a letter to that person. Either is it saying, you know, how you saw your childhood, how you think that child feels, asking them how they are, if there was a traumatic event you remembered, maybe telling that child that you're safe now, protect that child. But I think really writing a letter to your inner child, to your child at a younger age. Second letter, write a letter to you at this present time. And it doesn't have to be about anything in particular. This is where I think the journaling exercises are so powerful. I like to leave it up to you. What would you like to write to yourself right now? Would you like to write as all the progress that you've done? Is it a letter that you wish you could have worked on something else? Is it just working about motivation and strength? Where you are right now, how your mood is, how, you know, kind of taking a personal inventory. The last letter is write a letter to you in 10 years. And again, in this letter, is it what do you see yourself in 10 years? What you've hoped to accomplish? Maybe asking some questions. Are you happy? I mean, also, you know, kind of going through your fears, going through your hopes, going through your dreams. And again, this isn't something to have any judgment or there's no right way, there's no wrong way. It's really just to bring awareness, to open up a question in your mind, to plant a seed of growth, of healing, and of moving forward. Again, I want to thank everyone so much for listening to our show tonight. Please send all questions to insightintohealing@gmail.com and check out our Facebook page, Insight Into Healing. And also you can check out Penelope Film fan page on Facebook and Cervellino Productions. We will close the show with Every Good Thing by the Actors. Everyone, good night and God bless.